T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Joe Yerden joins me. And Joe, it's been a while since I've had you on. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for making time for me on this beautiful Saturday morning. I'm excited to have you. How are you, my friend?
Doing well, Nate. It's always fun to be on talking with you, and be more fun if there was fun hockey to talk about. But hey,
I would say that's right. But you know, at the same time, anytime you have an opportunity to sort of rip a scab off and see whether or not it can grow back in some sort of meaningful way without scar tissue showing up, I think we've got something. You know, we've got something to work with here, Joe. And I think, you know, I was just saying this to a friend last night, and I was like, hey, man, last time we saw each other, because every time I see my buddy, we always kind of end up talking about the Sabres. I don't know why, but we do. And so we were talking about the Sabres last night when we were out having a couple of pops. And I said, you know, last time we saw each other, I felt like things were really looking up the end of the season. We're watching Casey Mittelstadt. We're watching Tage Thompson and Asplund, that line. We're watching the young guys and Cousins. And it just seemed like the attitude, it seemed like even some of the outside voices had started moving in more of a positive direction. And then the end of season press conferences happened, and it sort of felt like we moved right back into the same sort of feelings we had during that, whatever it ended up being, 17, 18, whatever, game losing streak. It almost felt as sort of negative and dark as that. And I'm wondering, sort of, just when you think about the roller coaster that was this season, how do you put into perspective what we heard from, it felt like 3 very different days, right, Joe? Like, day one was, holy crap, this is bad. Day two is, well, the young guys, they're making me feel better. And then day three was, well, I like the coach, but the GM's really worrying me here. So, like, put into perspective sort of the roller coaster that was the 3 days of press conferences and kind of how it maybe coincided with the season and kind of how it was an emotional roller coaster there as well.
Yeah, the way the 3-day the press junket seemed to turn out was almost a mirror image of the season, where everything was bad. To start off, you get your first couple interviews and you're like, okay, all right, well, it sounds a little dire. And then you get to the end and you get to Jack and you're like, oh boy, okay, yeah, this is not good. This is really not good. And then you get your look at the young guys, which is wild to me that guys like Casey and Tage are the young guys compared to old man Jack Eichel at 24 years old. But I mean, I guess hard times can age a person, so that's fair. But it's you get some boost out of those guys, because those guys all needed a lift. Like they all had to play better this season, and Don Granato was able to find ways to do that for them. So that's a huge boost. And you know what, the final day, I mean, Don's end of season meeting was basically him interviewing for his job, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
And him stating his case that, yeah, I belong here. This job should be mine. And, you know, he understands, you know, the situation's definitely different, because there's a lot of candidates out there. There's a lot of available coaches, and there's going to be a lot of voices to sort through. And, you know, when it comes to Kevin Adams, I mean, geez, talk about everything he's had to get a handle on this whole year. From the moment he was hired to right now, it's a lot. It's a lot for a guy in the first year of a job, and a guy with a limited staff. I mean, yeah, it's nice that he's got Karmanos with him now, but goodness gracious, that's just so much to try to get a handle on. And with all the problems that have come up and all the problems that he's staring at right now, man, I mean, there are GMs that have been around for 20 years that would probably look at this and go, okay, all right, this is rough. So Trying to find the glimmers of hope here. Yeah, it's, you know, I'm happy that those guys like Asplund and Mittelstadt and them had a nice season and a nice bounce back for them, because they had to. I mean, if they didn't, I mean, things would be even more dire, because then you're looking at, boy, you can just blow it up and probably just move on and be okay with it, because you're just like, well, we got nothing here if Jack and Sam go. So I mean, this is, you know, it's good for Don. I mean, Don made his case. Mm-hmm. You know, the way the team played down the stretch. I mean, would have been harder. It would have been really hard to do worse than Ralph did. I mean, I don't know how you do worse than losing 18 in a row, but it would have been very difficult for him to do worse than that. But you know, he got something out of these guys. He had them playing loose. He had them playing free, and that's good. That's a really good thing, because these guys needed it. So, you know, if they decide to stick with him, it's good from a development aspect. I do wonder though if he would be the right call if they're able to patch things up and get this crew back together and make an honest to goodness run.
And I think it sort of leads me into something that that stuck out to me anyways, or really stood out. There was a couple of things, a couple of aspects of Adam's press conference and some of the things that he said that stood out to me. And I say the first one really being the term buy-in that he mentioned, talking about the talent on the team versus the buy-in. And I think the guy that stands out to me here is Taylor Hall, because Taylor Hall comes here in a one-year deal, a prove-it deal in a contract year, and you can't really get anything out of him. And now, granted, there was some really bad luck at play with Taylor Hall. I mean, a lot of decent scoring chances. I mean, he takes a puck to the face. He just had sort of a run of really bad luck here in Buffalo. And, you know, I think it was probably well known that he really liked Ralph Krueger. It was interesting to hear a lot of the feedback you heard. I guess it wasn't really interesting. I think we all knew that the team and the players really liked Ralph Krueger as a person. But the disconnect on how he is viewed amongst those players, and then the term buy-in being there, and thinking to yourself, okay, well, how could you like a guy as much as these players claim to have liked Ralph while he was here, but not be able to buy into what he was trying to do? And whether or not, let's just pretend, Joe, that the team, quote-unquote, bought into the system. Do we see a different brand of hockey? Are we seeing a different product in the ice if there's, quote, buy-in from that team? Or was this strictly, the system was bad? It's not a modern-day NHL system, especially a system that can really highlight the skill set of the younger roster that they had, particularly Rasmus Dahlin, who is a, by the way, different hockey player since sort of being let loose in this Granato system, which is a little more free, just a little freewheeling kind of system. But I guess the question here is buy-in. What does that mean when you consider that you need buy-in from the top guys? And if you're not getting it, where are you?
Yeah, the buy-in for Ralph was, it changed, I think, with the whole Skinner situation. I think that's the point when he really lost a lot of the guys in the room, because it's like, listen, this guy's doing his best. You know, you're saddling him with a couple of our worst players, and he's still generating these opportunities. And yeah, he's not scoring, but literally nobody on the team is. And if you're going to punish him for that, well, you got to punish Jack. You got to punish Taylor Hall. You got to you got to do that. And instead, it just seemed to be, you know, screw Jeff. We're benching him. And it was just like, okay, that's the way it's going to be, man. Like, I guess, but that doesn't seem very fair. I mean, if it's to send a message, well, the message wasn't received. And, you know, that kills your chance of getting a buy-in. But you're right about his system. His system, I mean, if you use that system in international play with coaching Switzerland, that's the perfect system for that, because you don't have the amount of talent. You don't have the superstars. You don't have the guys to be able to run and execute it. And
for football guys, Joe, it's like running triple option, right? It's like Army and Navy and Air Force. They don't get the recruits that Clemson and Alabama get. The size of their offensive linemen are smaller. So how you stay in games is you control the ball, try to have long, sustained 15, 20, 30 play drives, run the football, run the clock out, and hope you can keep a close game, right? I mean, like, that's the football equivalent of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, it's you know, it's not as fun as like a single wing, even though a single wing is gonna you know, you run out an Air Force or,
yes,
or a Navy offense. Like, you're not running that, even that exorbitant of an offense out there. You're just still you're trying to grind it down. You're trying to wear the other team down. You want to keep the score as low as possible. And you know, that was something that just doesn't fly in the NHL right now. At least not the way when it's played like that. I mean, if you play the way the Islanders do, yeah, you can have a lot of success doing that. But the Islanders do a ton of other things that are better than that. But in Ralph's case, like that style in the NHL just doesn't work. Like it doesn't fly when you're asking your defenseman to hold the line at your, you know, in the offensive zone. Stop at the blue line. Don't go in deep. Just let the forwards handle the offense. Like you cannot play that way in the NHL now. You have to have your defensemen involved. Like you have to be able to play off the rush. You have to be able to do these things. And that was an easy switch for Granato to flip there, because it's just kind of like, all right, listen, we're going to do things a little bit more modern here. Dahlin, if you're carrying the puck in, go in deep. I don't care. Don't slam on the brakes of the blue line and take a bad shot. Like, let's try to get better shots. So like that, from that side of things, like it's hard to get a buy-in when you're basically playing rod hockey, with pros, because, you know, these guys have different skills. They have different abilities and ways to get the puck and to get to the net. And if you're just saying like, no, my system is better than your skills, I mean, you got to prove it, you know. And if you're going against the skills of your players, then you're just doing yourself a disservice. And I think that was a big part of why things struggled here, certainly this season, because the buy-in's not there, because you don't believe in it, because you're doing all these things where you're asking guys to go against what they, you know, what they're really good at, and that just does not fly in the NHL. And you know what, when you get predictable, NHL teams can just watch a little bit of video and figure it out. And defending against a team that's that predictable, it makes it elementary. And that's what I think they really ran into.
So I guess the follow-up question, and maybe this is just as simple as saying they liked Ralph the Human, but I guess how could guys like Jack Eichel, who at this point is a respected top 10, top 15 type player in the league — Taylor Hall isn't maybe that anymore, but is a guy around the league, people are like, Taylor Hall's Taylor Hall, okay? He's the name that carries weight. How can you then, and Sam Reinhart said the same thing, coming off the best season of his career, but most of that damage came under the coaching change. I guess my follow-up question, Joe, is how can you actively talk the way you do about liking Ralph Krueger as a person, saying, like, I wanted to be a part of my life for the rest of my life? That's what Jack Eichel said about Ralph Krueger, while he's actively basically setting you up for failure in your profession. And I think about it, I've had a lot of great bosses that weren't particularly good at their job, but it's not like they made some sort of impact on me personally where I was able to overlook what they were doing to hurt me in my profession, you know? And I guess it's a very confusing relationship, hearing the team talk about Ralph the way that they did while looking at how they responded to him as a coach. There was such a disconnect between their respect for him as a coach and their respect for him as a person and like a leader. And I guess my question there is, what the hell? You know, like, I guess, how can you have both? How can you have both of those things?
Well, I think that boils down to, like, what, you know, some of the other stuff that we got to know about Ralph personally, you know, him as, you know, the great speaker, him, you know, which, I mean, he is, let's face it. You know, there. How many press conferences did we watch where he won the press conference? Pretty good number of them, at least, you know, before the end times came, you know, where you're just kind of like, wow, okay, I could listen to that guy talk forever. And him as a person, like, he's so affable, he's so, you know, he's so easy to get along with and everything. And, you know, I think the thing we forget about guys in hockey is that for a lot of them, it is really just business. And, you know, you can have somebody where it's, you know, if you go out and you're having a, you know, if you have a bad game or whatever, I mean, guys like Jack and Sam, they still produce well. They still played well personally, even though the team wasn't having success. But, like, that's not an affront to them. You know, the way Ralph coached the team, it's not an affront to them personally, even though, you know, the team success was lacking. Like, him as a person, you can divest the two. And I get what you're saying, Nate, because believe me, there's been, you know, I think we've all been there in those kinds of situations where, you know, somebody might be really good, but if they're bad for you at your job, you're just like, geez, this guy's a letdown. I don't know if I could really hang out with them. But, you know, I think it's a little bit different when, you know, you've piled up millions of dollars and, you've already achieved a lot. I mean, you've achieved a lot. You haven't hit the heights of it. But you can divest from that. Like, there, you know, guys loved Phil Housley too. Like, they loved and respected Phil Housley. But, you know, ultimately, when the, you know, if you're coaching a system that you don't, you know, that isn't working and you don't buy into it, like, it's easy to tune it out, and you're just kind of like, all right, like, it's what he wants. We're gonna do it, but it stinks. But we still like the guy. You know, we'll still go play golf with him. We'll still shoot the breeze with him. Like, that's like a whole different world to some of these guys. Like, to take it personally, what happens with a coach? I mean, you got to go back to what happened with Dan Bylsma, where you know Bylsma just didn't do anything that those guys liked. And they couldn't wait for him to leave.
Yeah, it is interesting to sort of see the, and that's, I guess that's the confusing part, right? Is thinking about how this team sort of responded to Bylsma, who, you know, frankly, wasn't really setting them up for success on the ice. But I guess they're, you know, kind of looking back at that whole situation, there were numerous times where people talked about, you know, his really inability to communicate and connect with the players. And I think that's really where Ralph probably came in and sort of brought that. And I wonder, this is a good transition point getting into Don Granato, because I think with Don, I think he brings a little bit of both. Maybe not the same level of personal connection and potential, you know, sort of like an enigma or just sort of that being in the locker room. But I think his system, along with his ability to connect with younger players and his experience in USA Hockey and coaching for other really successful organizations. And I wonder what you think about his time, quote unquote, because I think right now, you know, his story is unbelievable too, by the way. Just everything about Don really speaks to, it sort of feels like the Pegulas may have kind of fallen into something here. And it would be a shame to me that they look internally and they say something along the lines of, well, listen, we really, it's not Don that we don't like. It's where we are as an organization where we don't really have the luxury of trying Don out for a full-time basis. And we need someone that we know can come in, that's regimented, that has a system that works, that is respected by players. So let's go get John Tortorella, or let's go get Bruce Boudreau, or like Quinn, right? Like, that's another name that I think your point about there maybe being more head coaching candidates on the market than definitely the last few times the Sabres have been up to bat, I think makes for this decision ultimately really interesting. But I look at Granato, Joe, and I say to myself, this really strikes me as a guy that gets it, that isn't a, you know, my way or highway type of guy and can be malleable with his system, but depending on the types of players he has. And I just feel like he's the perfect fit, and it almost worries me that the timing of this makes it harder for the Pegulas to buy in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, they're at the Sabres are at a crossroads here. I think the next direction of where this franchise goes hinges on how things play out this summer with how they put together the roster. You know, depending on what happens with Jack and Sam and Ullmark and, you know, all those guys, where you're just like, you know, you're talking about a radical change if you're watching those guys go. And I think that's where picking a coach comes in. You almost have to get that settled out. You have to get the players settled out first before you settle on a coach. Because if you're bringing Don, you know, if you tell Don, okay, you're our guy, you're coming in, let's do this. You know, we're giving you 2 or 3 years. Like, let's go. Let's make this work. And if you're keeping, you know, if you find a way to cool the waters with Jack and Sam and those guys, and you get them to buy in long term, is Don the right guy to make it work with those guys? I mean, obviously he's made it work with Sam, but we don't know how it works with Jack. You know, like that's a huge key, because he's your best player. If he stays, that's a huge thing you've got to get figured out. And I'm not saying like you have to ask Jack, okay, what coach do you want? Like, that's not how you do it. But you got to get somebody who's going to be able to, that you trust to be able to lean into what makes him go and what makes him work best, and find the guys to play with him that make it the optimal combination. And I think that's, you know, between that and, you know, the style and how they want to run a power play and all that, that all comes in huge. And that's where I think you have to try to do your best to compare. And it's real. I mean, that's where Don's at a disadvantage, because, you know, he's coaching a team that was just, you know, they were done. By the time he was hired, they were already out of a playoff race. They're non-factor. and you're just kind of coasting him into the end of the year. But he did well with it. But I think if you're at a point where you're trading Jack and Sam and saying like, okay, we're going to start over again here. Yeah, the fans are going to hate it. But I think if you've got Don in that spot to kind of guide the ship and grow with that team, I think that's an even better spot. I think that's where you would start seeing, you know, the Lindy Ruff comparison and whatnot. I think that's where you start saying like, okay, like this guy's going to be able to mold this young team and hit, you know, the way he wants to and the way he wants to get it done. And you kind of cool things off and you hit a reset on the clock, because you can yell about, you know, 10, 11 years out of the playoffs and say, well, it's okay because we, you know, this team needed a whole new restart. And that's where I think you're much cooler and calmer and happier with Don in that spot. But if you keep Jack and you keep Sam and you're saying, all right, let's get another kick of the can here. Let's get this figured out. I don't know that Don is the guy that you want to put in that spot, because you're immediately heaping on a ton of everything onto his shoulders and say, okay, bud, let's go get it. I think that's a spot where you need somebody who's been through that rigor before, you know, whether it's a Gallant or a Boudreau, you know, a Claude Julien, or Tortorella gets results. Just everybody ends up hating him after 3 years.
Right.
So, you know, it's a whole different kind of thing. So that's where a lot of this debate is going to be so hard, because you almost have to figure out what you're doing with this team first before you pick a coach.
Yeah, and the kind of last thing here, Joe, that maybe is the most interesting part to me, and I love this point that you're sort of making, and it reminds me a lot of the Bills at year 10 of their playoff drought, where they kept trying to push the envelope because they kept feeling the pressure of that drought, and I think that the pressure of the drought forced them into making short-sighted, short-term decisions that ultimately kept piling on and creating that snowball effect. And you keep adding in pressure, poor short-term, you know, moves as a franchise, and that's how a 10-year drought turns into a 17-year drought. And I wonder for the Sabres if we're almost at that point now where you're going to make a decision based on the pressure of no success for as long as they've been, and you're going to make a short-term decision that will ultimately keep snowballing this thing. So, you know, how much does the pressure of this playoff streak or playoff-less streak maybe play into the decision-making, whether or not it should or should not be the case?
It's got to be a factor. I mean, I think it's going to be in their minds anyways. I don't think that's the reason you make decisions, because that's how you keep looking for band-aids on a gaping wound. I think that's what happens there. That's how you end up hiring, you know, the NHL's version of Rex Ryan when you've got Sean McDermott, you know, telling you, hey, talk to this guy. And they're like, nah, Rex Ryan's really emphatic. We really like him. He painted his truck in the Bills colors. Let's get him. Oh, he'll bring his brother in too. It'll be great. You know, like that's where you run into a situation like that in, you know, the NHL, where you're just kind of like, well, yeah, we've got this thing here, but we just got to reset the clock. Let's just get the playoffs, and then we'll figure it out after that. And then you end up hiring a coach that's going to, you know, maybe he gets you there, but he burns you out really fast. And I know this sounds like I'm describing Tortorella, but it could be anybody. But it's something where you've got to, like, this is what I mean. We're figuring out what you're doing with your team roster wise is such an important thing here, because you got to figure out how you want to go about it. And if you decide that you just want to be the eighth best team in the East and get into the playoffs, then okay, you can find a coach that can coach guys up to do that. But if your goal really is to make a Stanley Cup and you want to do it, you know, the most genuine way possible, then, you know, you've got some other options out there, and you've got to figure out who's the best fit. And they, you know, that's something where the ownership has really struggled with in getting things. I mean, they struggled with a lot on the Sabre side of things. Let's not dance around it. They have, but figuring out who your guy is and how you want this team to be built to try to get you there. That's what they're really staring themselves in the face with right now, because this is going to be a huge summer for them. And if they are making trades, I mean, yeah, you got to make the right trades, but if you're moving these guys out and you're going even more youth, boy, you got to have the right coach no matter what. But I think one the option you've got with Don is going to help out a lot with steadying that ship. But I don't know if that's, you know, if that's the right move. If you're saying no, our plan is to get back in the playoffs and win a Stanley Cup next year. I don't know how you do that by putting that on Don's shoulders.
Yeah, man, you know, just get Taylor Hall. That means we're going for a Stanley Cup. I guess that's what that means. Joe, appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much for making time. Great conversation, and look forward to kind of following along. And hopefully very soon I'm reading your work for some great hockey publication very soon.
It would be awesome, Nate, but I appreciate your time, and it's always fun talking.